Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
As folks probably know, the laws in Ohio changed on the very day of Dobbs on June 24th. There had been SB 23, which was the quote-unquote heartbeat bill, which had passed back in 2019. But while Roe was the law, the heartbeat bill had been held up in the courts. We all sort of knew that the attorney general in the state was going to ask for SB 23 to be enforced at the time that Dobbs came. And as expected, they did ask for the injunction to be lifted on June 24th. What we didn't expect, which probably in retrospect we should have been ready for, was for the law to change at that very moment. You know, the judge overturned the injunction right then. And because it had been held up in injunctions in the court, you didn't have the usual 90-day waiting period. Most of the time when a law goes into effect, you have 90 days. And the 90 days is very important because you have to review the law, you have to change your, you know, policies and protocols. SB 23 was the law in Ohio that very night. and I happened to be on call. I was on call for MFM that Friday night, and I remember people started to say, you know, text me saying the law had changed. I was like, how long do we have? And everyone said, you know, it's the law right now. So I had to go in, like, you know, Saturday. I had to go in Sunday, and what if I had a bleeding patient, what if I had a patient who was going into heart failure. As folks are also probably aware, the law is now back under injunction by state law. My gratitude and, you know, kudos towards the legal team who have been fighting SB 23, and specifically they made the wise decision to move it from the state Supreme Court, which was willing to hear the case but not apply a injunction to a district court in Cincinnati. I should pause here and say that I'm neither a lawyer nor a legislator, but placed it under a injunction sooner, because we had gone about 2.5 months under SB 23. So it is an injunction now, and my understanding is will remain an injunction until reruled by the Ohio Supreme Court. We did have statewide elections in November, including the Supreme Court. You know, the justices which were elected, you never know how anyone is going to rule. They do historically tend to lean against abortion rights. So there is a high probability, at least, that at some point SB 23 may be put back into, you know, law by the Supreme Court at that time, at which point our next step would be a constitutional amendment. That, of course, is a complicated and potentially long process. We're going to have to see what the legal process is for SB 23 versus getting a constitutional amendment on the ballot. I do believe that if we have a constitutional amendment in the state, it would pass, you know, like most states. The great lion's share of people who live in Ohio do support certainly at least fundamental, you know, rights, let alone laws that are extreme as SB 23. You know, SB 23 makes no exception for rape, no exceptions for incest. There's no exception for any sort of fetal condition, including, you know, anomalies which are outright lethal. The 2.5 months under which we were under SB 23 were just awful, you know, basically. And I feel somewhat lucky and grateful to our legal team to have the injunction in place now. I hope for the injunction to be in place for as long as we can. And my heart absolutely goes out for my colleagues in other states, we're not as fortunate as we are at the moment, you know, especially, you know, friends in Georgia with the 6-week ban just went back into place. And even under SB 23, our situation in Ohio certainly was not as bad as that in Texas. For example, SB 23 did explicitly spell out that we could provide abortion services to patients with pre-viable POM, pre-viable membrane rupture. We did not have to wait for either, bleeding or infection or fever, which, certainly was not the case in Texas and some of the other states. In terms of how things were during that time period, you can roughly divide it, of course, into the fetal cases and the cases for maternal health. The fetal cases were just sad. When it came to the law for the fetal cases was very straightforward. SB23 did not allow for termination, even under the most lethal of circumstances. And there were patients that we saw who had lethal anomalies who were not able to provide abortion care to. There are patients in Ohio right now who are having to continue pregnancies, from that 2.5 month, period because they were not able to get abortion care, which is, of course, utterly tragic. So those fetal cases were legally straightforward, though heartbreaking, in many circumstances. The maternal medical cases were much more stressful. The law did spell out some specific conditions, but a lot of it, like a lot of these laws in Ohio, was by no means unique in this circumstance. A lot of these language was fairly unclear, and it, carries criminal penalties. No one wants to face criminal penalties, and it was predominantly an affirmative defense, where the burden of proof, without myself being a lawyer or necessarily being able to explain this elegantly, but basically the affirmative proof was based on us. Specifically practicing maternal fetal medicine, moms with health conditions is what we do and what we see in a very, day in and day out sort of way, and do have to offer abortion services to cases where mom's health is at risk. We're just not used to thinking about criminal charges in medicine in general, especially in obstetrics, especially in maternal fetal medicine. Civil risks are present all the time. And from like a psychological standpoint, we get used to facing civil risk. Not just with practice, but with regards to sort of our like emotional expectations and the emotional sort of armor that we wear. We're not used to facing criminal risks. Criminal risks really aren't part of, medicine at all. And to find yourself having to think about criminal charges in the context of trying to provide the best patient care that we can was a terrible circumstance to be in. Yeah, I mean, diagnosing a birth defect, of course, is difficult under even the best of circumstances. We would generally take the approach of trying to keep everything as similar as we could, try to keep everything as similar as we could to before Roe. So you obviously have to go through the process of diagnosing it, breaking the bad news to the patient, and then discussing the options. And in Ohio, SB 23 didn't limit speech. There are other states where you are not allowed to refer or where there are constraints on provider speech. So we can still counsel patients normally. And for the patients who did want to discontinue pregnancies in the context of a fetal anomaly, we could still refer out of state. And a lot of the work that we needed to do at that time was to set up our referral patterns, mostly to from Cleveland, Michigan, and Pittsburgh. And fortunately, even if things do change again in Ohio, it looks like rights should be clear in those two states for the time being. So, we were at least able to keep moving forward with everything we could to try to provide out-of-state procedures. Of course, some patients don't have the money to travel and really time. One of the problems is that in many circumstances, other states have a 24-hour waiting period. And depending upon the exact interpretation of the law, sometimes the 24-hour waiting period cannot start until the patient is physically in the other state. And the 24-hour waiting period usually predates cervical dilators or LAM. So you would have to have travel to another state, and then 24 hour, waiting period, and then usually 24 hours of, cervical agents. And then it just all equates to basically like days, and even if a patient has the money, you don't always have patients who can, dedicate days.
Right.
The constitutional amendment is the next step. That's a very complicated process, with the major question being trying to get it on the ballot at 2023 versus 2024. There's advantages and disadvantages. Obviously, 2023 would be sooner. And if you have these abortion laws in place, like every day and every week counts. Even the 2.5 months that we were under SB 23 was way too long, and we had serious harm, which occurred under those 2.5 months. So, part of me would certainly want 2023, and there's people who are leaning towards, 2023. On the other hand, 2023 is pretty soon, in terms of getting everything set to get it on the ballot. And then if you want to be absolutely certain that it passes, you're potentially going to have more voters going to the polls in 2024. 2024, however, is going to cost a lot more. These are very expensive in endeavors. And so, media ad buys are going to be much more pricey in 2024, especially because we'll have other races going on at that time. Of course, I'm like a doctor, so I'm not a pollster. I don't work for 538 or things along those lines. So I have my own opinions regarding, 2023 or 2024, most of which are that I would absolutely want adverse laws to be in effect for as short of a duration as we possibly can, given the human suffering that is at the state. Though, to a large extent, I will defer a lot of these strategy decisions to the people who work in this area. Ultimately, all of the interested parties in the state are going to need to be on the same page. There's multiple groups who are going to work on a constitutional amendment, of which ACOG, plans to obviously be involved, or one group or among many. At some point, we'll settle on language and exact strategy, and then we will be all in. It's going to be a long haul. It's going to be the long game. But, I do believe that abortion rights will be reinstated. Constitutional amendments and ballot, measures have passed in every single state, including states like Kentucky and Kansas and other states which are similar to Ohio with regards to being, purplish, states. And I will just refuse to believe that a law as terrible as SB 23, which causes the suffering that SB 23 causes, that it is opposed by such a large percentage of the people in Ohio, would be able to remain on the books forever. Of course, I want, if the injunction is lifted and it does go back into effect, I'd want that period to be as short as humanly possible. But you always sort of play the long game. And I do believe that abortion rights will be restored, at some, future point. And we are certainly here, for the long game to sort of fight the fight in this state as well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PAP Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.